Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to talk about the Kingdom of God, and we're going to talk about something that we've been talking about for about 20 shows, both on this station and other stations, and that is religion. And we've written an article, should be appearing on News of Views shortly, that is talking about what this word means. And one of the amazing things about language is that words can have multiple meanings. Almost every word in the dictionary, in an unabridged dictionary, will have several definitions. As these definitions change, our opinion of these words that represent ideas will change. Therefore, the ideas themselves will change. And I often find it interesting how words like idol and ideas are very similar words. They don't really have the same origin, but often idolatry is very much caught up with the use of words. We construct ideas and concepts and precepts with words in our minds, and the changing of the definition of those words will allow us to change the way we look at things. And if someone else is regulating the definition of those words, especially when we go and read ancient documents, we will be confused. And of course, that's what Babylon is all about, is confusion. And Babylon and Babel and all these words that we see have a similar idea, that they reference words and the meaning of words. And when I began this journey in earnest, some 30 some odd years ago, it began with a dictionary, looking up a legal dictionary, looking up the meaning of words, and finding out that I did not understand how these words were being used. If you're going to read a legal document, you need a legal dictionary, because the words will mean something different in that legal dictionary. So if you're reading laws and regulations, I just heard a news story about the Miranda rights. And Miranda is a Supreme Court case that said that you have a right to remain silent, you don't have to testify against yourself, etc. This was the conclusion, and we get this where now policemen were reading you your Miranda rights as if your rights came from somebody named Miranda. And in the course of the news story, they reference these rights as privileges. Well, the word privilege and the word rights are not the same. The Miranda privileges are civil privileges granted by a document. Rights to remain silent and not testify against yourself, that's a right. That doesn't come from a privilege. So these aren't the same things, but they're using these words interchangeably. You know, it's like this recent story of Snowden, who supposedly revealed that the government was committing crimes from his point of view in relationship to privacy, and were, you know, accessing phone records without search warrants, which would be considered a violation of certain rights. And of course, that lawyer would refer to those as privileges. Privacy is a privilege. Evidently, there's two ideas of a transparent government. One is where you get to see what the government is doing, and the other one is the government gets to see what you're doing. And it's just a point of view. But the reality is that the meaning of words will change position and thinking and interpretation and philosophies and ideas and eschatologies. So if you change the meaning of words, you change your perspective, and you you begin to understand things in a particular way. So we were talking about religion, and this is almost an unending subject. Like I said, we've got over 20 hours now that we've discussed this. But we talked about the definition of religion. And religion used to be how you performed your duty to your fellow man and to God. Yeah, now your duty to fellow man was to love your fellow man according to God. And that would mean to take care of him in times of need. If he had, if he's injured or got sick or somehow fell on desperate times, a fire, famine, flood, whatever, you should help him out. You should be the FEMA of your society, the Faith Emergency Ministry Auxiliary. That's what we say. When we say FEMA, that's usually what we're talking about, because we're not about force. And federal is about force. It's not about charity. It's the benefactors who exercise authority one over the other, but call themselves these benefactors, but they're actually rulers. So anyway, this is what religion used to be, but now it's become what you think. And what you think is highly regulated by the definition of words. And they've redefined these words to deceive you. You had to turn religion into what you think. Into, I believe this, and that's my religion. When religion used to be what you did. Even in the Greek, the threskia, it means what you do. Rites and ceremonies were actually the way in which you did that, the way in which you fulfilled your and performed your duty to your fellow man and to God. That's what rites and ceremonies were. Now they're just blowing smoke and wearing vestments, and it's all whited sepulcher stuff, just like it was in the days with the Pharisees. Yet they say this is religion. That if you say these words and you wave your hands and you get these emotional feelings, that God will be happy with you. And Jesus says, better that you attend to the weightier matters of law, judgment, mercy, and faith. Is Snowden a traitor? They're trying to charge him with treason. Or is he a hero? Well, this all depends on your point of view. There's lots of Democrats and, I don't know if it's just Democrats, but it appears to be kind of dividing along Democrat-Republican issues, that he's a traitor and that he has done a treasonous thing by exposing what he believes was a crime. And so they're charging him. And, they want to give him 10 years for each count, and I don't know how many counts there are. But it's just an example in our times that we can look at in order to decipher what is moral, what is righteous, what is tending to law, judgment, mercy, and faith. This is happening on your watch. Who will come to his aid if he should have somebody come to his aid? I don't know. I don't know the details of what he divulged, but it appears that he was trying to expose what he saw as a crime being committed by people working in government that should be arrested from his point of view as violating the law of the fact that you have a right specified in the Bill of Rights and Constitution. You have a right to privacy. And the government cannot just come into your house and break into your private communications. And, of course, they can redefine private communications. Well, in the course of these 20 hours discussing religion, we talked about pure religion, unspotted by the world, of course, is how you take care of the needy of your society, widows and orphans and who have you. Unspotted by the world, and the word world there comes from five different Greek words are translated in the Bible into the single English word world sometimes. And the word they use there means, according to Thayer's constitutional order system, government. So, if we understand that to be true, that it's this world that we're not to let spot our pure religion is government. That sets pure religion in a whole different light. Unspotted by the world. What do they mean? Unspotted by the planet? You don't rub dirt on it? Well, no, it unspotted by force, because John the Baptist, until John the Baptist, people were establishing their governments of the world by force. And John the Baptist said, no, if you have two coats and your neighbor has none, share. Share your surplus with others. Even sacrifice, even fast from what you have. You know, do without a little bit so that you can give to others. This was what John the Baptist was preaching, and John the Baptist was praised by Christ. And we see Christ doing the same. Though he was rich, he made himself poor, that he was giving away. And he warned that rich men will have a hard time getting into the kingdom. It'd be easier to get a camel to the eye of the needle. So anyway, pure religion is how you take care of your needy. Religion is what you do to fulfill your duty to your fellow man. All that is inconsistent thinking. It's not what you think or are told religion is today, if you look it up in the dictionary. So their impure religion is having your religion very much spotted by the world. In other words, how you take care of your needy is not totally by faith, hope, and charity, but is you're using the power and force of government. So that you, in your churches, you'll have a form of godliness, you know, you'll have all this niceness and love and sweetness and raising your hands and feeling a certain way. But in reality, how you take care of the needy of your society, educate, welfare, emergency situations in society to help the needy. That's all done by the world, the constitutional order and systems of government. That's impure religion. That's spotted by the world. It's not spotted anymore. It's barely spotted by the church. It is almost completely done by governments. And the church does nothing. Actually, if you go to poor countries where the government provides very little benefits, like Santo Domingo, about 20% of the people don't get the number required to get government benefits. They don't send their kids to public schools. They don't get government benefits. But when they work for somebody, they get to keep all the money. Nothing is taken out because they're not members. That's in a poor country. And so those people who don't get that number, they have to take care of one another because they live up in the hills where there's little or no government services anyway. You see, and that's what Christians were doing. And sometimes they had to move up to the hills. They had to leave town because they were not welcomed by all those people who live by covetousness, who covet one another's goods and like to pray to the benefactors who exercise authority one over the other. So anyway, that is the distinction between false religion and true religion. But in reality, both are religion. But one is false compared to what Christ was teaching. And it happens to be that most of the people claiming to be Christians today are deeply immersed in the religion, this public religion of the government. And of course, we've talked about public and private religion, and we'll touch on that again. But now we're going to talk about something different. We're going to talk about civil religion, which is really not something different at all. Civil religion is a term that shows up a number of times throughout history and is referenced a number of times throughout history. Civil religion. Remember, civil law, Roman law, and Roman civil law are the same systems of jurisprudence. That's a maxim of law found in Black's Law Dictionary. Civil religion. This is why Christians were persecuted. Is because they outlawed all religion except for civil religion. That's happening in America today. I mean, your health care. You're not going to be allowed to go to church for your health care. You have to go to the civil government for health care. Used to be you only went to church for health care. If you couldn't provide it yourself and you needed help, you would go to church. But now you go to the government. Well, you've been doing that right along. Used to be, where did you go to expand your education beyond the capacity of your parents? Used to go to church. They were the ones copying all the books. They're the ones that, I mean, you had monks measuring the circumference of the earth in 400 A.D. You know, Irish monks at that. So the reality was that's where you went. You went to church. The church took care of all the social welfare. That's why we have Lady Godiva on the cover of our free church report. So if you want to see that cover, you have to go find the book. It's on our website. And you can find the book easy, free church report. But you have to seek it. Anyway, role of religion in society. So what is religion? Religion is how you take care of the needy of your society and fulfill your duty to your fellow man. And not only the needy, but we think of the needy as the poor, but what happens if somebody's receiving injustice? You say they're going to be arrested for treason, and they didn't commit treason, they actually exposed a crime. Which I don't know if that's what Snowden did, but say that's what he did. You know, I'm not the jury, I haven't seen it. I've seen what the media says, but I don't know necessarily, but it appears from one point of view that that's what he did. He exposed a crime. And the people they should be arresting is the criminals who were delving into private communications, what people believed were private communications, without search warrants. That would be a crime. They should be arrested. They should be going to jail for 10 years. But instead, Snowden, who exposed the crime for no personal gain of his own, actually, he had a great expense. There's somebody else who, I don't remember his name, Bradley or whatever it is, revealed thousands of documents to WikiLeaks or however that works. I haven't seen the documents. I don't know his guilt or innocence, but he did this because he believed that there was criminal activity in government. Now, he may be deluded and maybe he should be arrested. Maybe he shouldn't be. But if he was really exposing a crime, then he should be given extra protection and allowed, you know, I mean, isn't this what the whole thing was in World War II when people were supposedly executing thousands and thousands of Germans and Poles and what have you, and they said, well, we're just following orders. But the orders were criminal. They were a violation of human natural, God-given rights. And so, therefore, those soldiers should be held accountable because they did not refuse to obey unlawful orders. But evidently, some people think that it's okay to snoop without a search warrant. They don't think the Fifth Amendment applies. And actually, to some degree, if you understand how the Constitution works and what freedom is really all about, they have a case. But they don't want to tell you that because then you might discover that you're not a free people anymore and that you don't have any rights and you only have privileges because you've waived all your rights so that you could get the civil religion of society, the civil benefits of society. You see, that's what's happened. That's how they have made you a snare. Is your civil religion, is your civil welfare. It is a welfare that is based upon force. Let's all have one purse. Way back in Proverbs, they talk about that. You look that up, one purse. It talks about it being a snare. And that, you know, even the bird, the net is spread before the bird, but he's still caught anyway. He sat and ate with rulers. And you wanted his dainties, even though it was at the expense of your neighbor, and you delighted in it. You aren't free. That's why you're not free. It isn't because you didn't get the vote. It isn't because you weren't politically active. It wasn't because you weren't a good Republican or Democrat or constitutionalist or whatever. There's no solution there. Governments won't change till men change. And the only man you have a right to change is you. You have to change your religion. You become a civil religionist. Anyway, role of religion in society, take care of the needy. But instead, we have this idolatry of the mind, and it's part of that civil religion, that we create these institutions and we bow down and worship them because we think it's to our benefit. There's a transference of things spiritual to things that are physical. That's idolatry. Do we have a treasury of faith or a treasury of gold and silver? Well, we don't even have the gold and silver. We have a treasury of an imagination because we live in a debt-ridden society where there is nothing of substance in the treasury but you and your right to work and your right to live and your right to have children. You have become human resources. You have become merchandise. And why? Because you have not tended to the weightier matters. You have been slothful. And the slothful should be under tribute, according to the Bible. See, the Bible's all about government. And so there's a repetition of lies that are told to you over and over and over again in hopes that you will eventually believe them. And it worked. You've been believing them. And so now there needs to be a repetition of truth. And so that's what we've been doing for the last 20 shows, is a repetition of truth. If you go back to Marcus Aurelius, who was a Stoic president of the empire, Ledwidge historians have often called the Golden Age of Rome. He says the only wealth which you will keep forever is the wealth you have given away. That's Marcus Aurelius. You know, when I read the Meditations of Marcus Aurelius, it sounded like an Episcopalian priest. Which kind of worries you, because Marcus Aurelius has the worst human rights record for persecuting Christians. Why would he sound like an Episcopalian? It's amazing. You know, Jesus talks about treasure in the kingdom. You know, store up for yourself treasure in the kingdom. You know, that's a concept. I mean, that's almost like what Marcus is saying there. What you give away to charity. He advocated charity amongst the Roman Empire, but yet still had the giveaway programs of free bread and welfare. And Antoninus Pius, who was his predecessor, was very much the same way. Marcus was his successor, and Marcus studied under Antoninus Pius. Antoninus explained that virtues and the polity of Christians as a self-governing people. It was explained to him prior to that by the apologist Justin the Martyr, who had written Antoninus and explained to him how Christianity worked. He says, we don't use your welfare, your civil religion, your temples, which were civil, the temples were supported by tax dollars. Your free bread would come from the Temple of Ceres. That's where it was distributed. That's your welfare office. Temple of Saturn, that was your Bureau of Vital Statistics. That's where you registered your birth certificate. You got to remember, these temple just means building, planned construction. It was how you set the building up that made it a temple. But these are government buildings. Yeah, they had symbols out front. Your buildings have symbols out front. You see, so that was their civil religion. And we're going to talk more about their civil religion and our civil religion when we come back. And then we're going to ask you, what religion do you think will set you free? And what religion will bring you into bondage? Be right back. Thank you.
My name is Mark and I'm from Melbourne in Australia, and I'm a minister in the church established by Jesus Christ more than 2,000 years ago. After reading the books published at hisholychurch.org, I realised that mainstream Christianity had taken a wrong turn by forgetting what Jesus said to do, to practice pure religion while remaining unspotted from the world. What does this mean and how is this done exactly? You'll find out when you go to hisholychurch.org and discover what it truly means to love God and your neighbour as much as yourself. Join the Living Network at hisholychurch.org.
Have you ever looked at the things happening in the world today and felt that something just wasn't right, but couldn't put your finger on it? Have you ever heard the phrase, "God bless America," and wondered to yourself, does he really? Or have you ever looked at the government's policies on things such as abortion or same-sex marriage and asked yourself, how could they? Or where are all the Christians voicing their outrage? These are hard questions that many people today ask themselves. But along with those hard questions come some very hard answers. Answers that you may never heard before, but nonetheless will answer these and other questions you may have. So if you're looking for answers, join us at hisholychurch.org. It's not what you might think, and it will open the heart and mind to a whole other world that you never even knew existed. It did for me and many others. I know it will for you as well. So join us as we seek the kingdom of God and His righteousness at hisholychurch.org.
The Creator is the God of the living, not the God of the dead. His kingdom was, is, and will be forever on earth as it is in heaven. Start by connecting and finding other kingdom-seeking families on the His Holy Church Living Network. Visit www.hisholychurch.org to start your journey back to your unalienable birthright.
I'm Brother Justice, and I'm a minister of His Holy Church of Sacramento, California. His Holy Church is a powerful weapon in the hands of God. The books, The Covenants of the Gods, and Thy Kingdom Come has changed the course of my life forever. For those of you who are truly looking for the way, I encourage you to look to His Holy Church at www.hisholychurch.org. May the good Lord bless you and keep you.
Hi, I'm Brent. I'm a contact minister for the Living Network in Northeast Missouri. You're not the only one out there with the desire to learn the truth. There are people all over the world coming together in faith, hope, and charity. Join us at one of the upcoming gatherings to meet new people, fellowship, work, and play. Whether it's the Fall Burning Bush Festival in Oregon or the Spring Gathering in Northeast Missouri, you'll get all the details when you join the Living Network. Go to hisholychurch.org and click on the network link. Find out what you've been missing. You'll be glad you did.
Well, welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom. We're talking about civil religion. Now and then. Celsus was a Platonist. He was a philosopher. And he lived during the period of time of Marcus Aurelius, who was just adamant about officially persecuting Christians. What was the problem? Celsus opposed the sectarian tendencies at work in the Christian movement because he saw in Christianity a privatizing of religion, the transfer of religious values from the public sphere to a private association. Now, of course, this is somewhat of a translation in ideas here. So this idea of sectarian tendency, it was a divisionary tendency. They were dividing the activities, the movement, the way the Christians were living privatizing their religion. The transfer of religious values from public sphere to the private association. This was the division that brought persecution. Well, if you don't know that religion is how you fulfill your duty to your fellow man, you don't understand what he's talking about. If you still think religion has something to do with what you think in your head, you know, what you believe about a superhuman creator, which is the way it was defined today in the dictionary, in, you know, 2013 dictionary, modern dictionary, then you don't understand what Celsus is talking about, or why Marcus Aurelius persecuted Christians. Because they could believe anything they want. Religious freedom was guaranteed under the original Roman Constitution. But the people weren't under the original Roman Constitution anymore. They were under the Patronus of the Emperor. What does Patronus mean? It means Our Father, who art in Rome, hallowed be thy name. That's what it means, because they were praying to their Father in Rome. How did they know that this was their Father in Rome? Their birth certificate was registered down at the Temple of Saturn. And with that, they could get benefits. They could get a charagma that would prove that they were entitled to benefits, so that when they went to get the free bread, they could get the free bread. They could be let into the Colosseum to see the free entertainment, because they had a charagma, a mark, a identifier. They also called it a titulus. It was state ID, and that made you eligible for the benefits. Now, more and more things became associated with those benefits, but what was coming about eventually with Vigilius Saturninus, proconsul of Africa in 180 CE, is that they outlawed any religion except the civil religion of Rome. All foreign religions, all sectarian religions, all religions that have been privatized. In other words, they were now coming together and sharing with those in their own midst. This is what Justin wrote. He said that those that had shared with those that didn't have enough. This is how we took care of our social welfare. Why is he telling Antoninus Pius this? Because Christians took care of their needy with faith, hope, and charity. Christians today don't do that. They wave their hands in church. They think that their music and emotional gyrations in their church, their vain babbling in their church, is somehow church service. They think that's worshiping God. They think it is. But it's not religion. It's not pure religion. They are practicing impure religion. Their Corbin, their sacrifices, make the word of God to none effect. And that's another subject. Now, many of you know what I'm talking about, who have listened and listened and listened. And I'm repeating this. I'm going over these things from a different point of view. You see, Augustus, the first emperor, and I'm quoting here, just so that you know where I'm quoting from, chapter 3 of the Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. Augustus was sensible that mankind is governed by names, nor was he deceived in his expectation that the Senate and people would not submit to slavery, the Senate and the people would submit to slavery, provided they were respectfully assured that they still enjoyed their ancient freedoms. That's why you can have fireworks on the 4th of July, so that you will believe that you're still free. But you're not. You're not free. You're in bondage. You're a human resource. You're merchandise. And you're a registered piece of merchandise. And you already have the mark of the beast. And remember, the mark of God was the Tav. It was to be put in your forehead before the destruction came, when they referenced in the Old Testament. Go around and put that mark of God in people. That was the Tav. Tav means faith. You don't have faith. You have faith in what you believe in your head, the ideas that you have in your head, but that's idolatry. You don't have faith in God. Because if you had faith in God, you would trust in Him and not in the men who call themselves benefactors but exercise authority. You would not be praying to them. Yeah, you sacrifice to them, you paid them, but they've already spent all that. That's already gone. If you want any benefits from them, they have to take it away from your children and your grandchildren. So in order for you to get benefits, you must curse your children. This is where you're at. I'm sorry to tell you. You are in bondage. You have returned to the mire. You have returned to your vomit. And you are now workers of iniquity. But you go to church and you sing and you babble and you wave your hands. My gosh. You are so far from the kingdom. Ephesians 5:5, for this ye know, that no whoremongers, nor unclean persons, nor covetous men, who is an idolater. In other words, worshiping at these other systems created by men. Idols are what you make with your hands. These systems are made with their hands. These temples are made with their hands. These depositories are made with hands. And you worship them. You covet what has been put into them. Not by faith, hope, and charity, but by force. Hath any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God? You have no inheritance there. If you desire benefits at the expense of your neighbor. And that includes public school, health care, fire departments, anything. When the representatives believe that they, be the power of the government apparatus unpunished, can plunder certain citizen groups on their incomes and property, they are fatally mistaken. In ancient Rome, social welfare support was introduced by Gaius Gracchus. I'm reading from an article here. In 158 to 122 BC. On a large scale. So Gaius Gracchus was the guy who was instituting this welfare of the state. To take care of the needy of their society. Through the state. Civil religion. All citizens of Rome were entitled to buy a monthly ration of grain at fixed prices, food stamps. The subsidized staple food of Rome became immediately the weapon of choice for the rulers to stay in high favor with the crowd and to maintain control over the political power. Food stamps, welfare. Cheap grain was initially sold without any means test to every individual willing to queue up. Now, this was to every individual that would, and he says in the article, queue up. But this means registered. And they had to know you were registered. And if you needed it, you go get it. And they trusted that only people who really needed it would go get it, but because there was no means test. From the beginning, there was about 50,000 people used this benefit in Rome itself. The free food policy evolved gradually over a long period of time. Since the inception of the system, the number of people living on public social assistance increased, and a few rulers in power dared to put an end to it. The first ruler to make an attempt was the great commander Lucius Cornelius Sulla. But this was about 78 BC is when he died, so it's sometime between about 138 and 78 BC. But it was stopped by severe social riots forcing him to retreat. then no less than 200,000 Roman citizens received the public social assistance and did stand up in defense of their right to cheap basic food, their right, their privilege. At the time of Julius Caesar's seizure of power in 49 BC, the number of people living on social welfare assistance had increased to a staggering 320,000. And this is one of the reasons why he had to take power, is because there was only about 1 million people. This is like 32% of the people were on government subsistence. And it was breaking the bank. Publius Clodius Pulcher abolished the charge in 58 BC, began distributing the grain for free. So they actually were just giving the grain away. There was no charge whatsoever. The result was a sharp increase in the influx of rural poor into Rome. It was bringing the poor and huddled masses into Rome to get on welfare. And we talked about this in one of the last shows, how other nations around about us are sending their poor to us, and they're getting on welfare, so that 50% of the immigrants from numerous countries, 50%, come here to get on welfare. And this, of course, takes some of the burden off of the those countries. Though it's squeezed down, but he, Caesar, managed later to introduce a means test that squeezed down the social welfare population to about 150,000. That's about 15%. After his death, followed several weak rulers, causing the number to again reach 320,000, again about 32%. A number that Gaius Julius Caesar Augustus, from 31 BC, by a new means test, managed to squeeze down to 200,000. So you see, there was this constant battle of trying to keep that number down. Trajan, which is about 100 AD, formalization of what they call the elementa, which was a trust, the grain dole was distributed from the temple Ceres. This welfare program had helped orphans and poor children. But this was called elementa. Hey, did you go to elementa school? That's where you get the word elementary. Elementary school, elementa. And then, see, now when we come up to Septimus Servus, free oil was distributed. Subsequently, emperors added on occasion free pork and wine. A milestone in the evolution was made in 274 with the emperor Lucius Domitius Aurelianus, commonly known as Aurelian. He made social welfare hereditary, but also boasted welfare benefits considerably by providing baked bread instead of corn supplements by pork, olive oil, and salt. So anyway, he was actually giving you the actual free bread, not just grain. You didn't even have to cook it anymore, and it was free. And you could get pork and oil and salt with that. And it was hereditary right. And of course, that's why, you know, this is in 275, but they had already made birth certificates mandatory under Marcus Aurelius, which were, again, registered in the temple. So your Bureau of Vital Statistics is the temple at which you really worship. And that's where you practice your civil religion, you see. The Romans did not only demand cheap basic food, but also subsidized the culture. The emperors assumed the responsibility of providing the citizens with publicity, funded entertainment, arts program. Do you ever hear of the arts program in your civil religion, your government? One historian estimates that the modern equivalent of $100 million a year was poured out in the circus gladiator duels alone. But that wasn't the only thing that they did. So anyway, that gives you a picture of their civil religion, but it doesn't start there. It starts with patriotism, and I say it that way so that you understand. Patria is the Latin word for father. When you start making the state your father, when you start worshiping the state, you begin the road to civil religion. And I have a note in here that I guess it's Mark Barkley, who is a televangelist in Midland, Michigan, goes around and preaches all over the country. He's referred to as the preacher of righteousness. I don't know who named him that. But he needs to repaint his jet, and it's going to cost $79,000 to repaint his private jet. And so he's asking for donations so that you will do that. So anyway, just in case you want to donate to that. But anyway, that was just a footnote that I had in there. We're going to start a series on Mark, which is not Mark Barkley, but Mark, the gospel writer. And I hope that you guys will stay tuned to that. When we look at Article 6 of the Constitution of the United States, which some refer to as the supreme law of the land, it certainly is for government, we see that in Clause 1, all debts contracted and engagements entered into before the adoption of the Constitution shall be as valid against the United States under the Constitution as under the Confederation. So, anyway, we're seeing this perpetuity of debt. Now, a lot of people are under the idea that they can just throw off any government that they're under. And they can just denounce it, and then they can go off and be free of it. That's not true. That's not what Christ said. Christ said, give to Caesar what is Caesar's and to God what is God. Now, you owe Caesar quite a bit because you've been asking and praying to Caesar for quite some time. You were probably educated in public schools, which your parents didn't pay enough taxes to pay for. So therefore, you forced your neighbor to pay them, and you got the government to do that, to take away from your neighbor. And this is why you go back in Proverbs, you go back to Abraham, you go back to Moses. They warn you that you will be brought into bondage with this type of Corbin, this type of social welfare, this type of civil religion, where you force your neighbor to contribute to your welfare, to your faith, your FEMA, instead of going to church for your FEMA, which would be your Faith Emergency Ministry Auxiliary. You see, from the beginning, we see him telling you to appoint seven, you know, choose seven, look out amongst yourself, pick seven men you trust. Well, that's just from the Old Testament. They were managing a particular part of your private religion. But you see, you've been in civil religion. You know, I know that what I'm saying is just absolutely overthrowing what you have believed was religion all this time. Section 1 in that document assured public creditors that the United States' new government would honor past debts. Hamilton put the debt of the Union at $11 million, $11.7 million, owing in foreign countries, and $42 million of domestic debt that's owing within the country itself. The states themselves owed $25 million, making the debt in an aggregate of about $79 million. And actually, I won't go into that. But anyway, this debt binds you. Are you ready to pay that debt? Now, I'm not going to go into all the details. People who want to expatriate. I had somebody call me the other day and wanted to know about expatriating. Well, expatriating to who? Expatriating, I mean, leaving your father, the state. Now, we have an article up and a booklet, and we cover it in one of the books, called No Man Father Upon the Earth. And I may start a series, What About Bob? That will be addressing a lot of religious ideologies that have come down that have been taking you away from the kingdom. by twisting the words of Paul in the Gospels. And we may continue with that series from time to time, the What About Bob series, because Bob is, Bob the common, it's like Joe, the common Joe, the common Bob is leading you away from Christ, using the Bible to do it. But anyway, American civil religion is a sociological theory that there exists a kind of religion of the United States, a non-sectarian faith. You remember now, the Christians were being persecuted because of the sectarian nature of privatizing religion. But anyway, they're saying here, non-sectarian faith with sacred symbols drawn from national history. Scholars have portrayed it as a cohesive force, a common sect of values that foster a social and cultural integration. Now, at the beginning of the show, we talked about items in the news such as Snowden, where you have one group of people saying that he's a hero, and another group of people saying that he is a treasonous criminal. And they're both working in government. I'm afraid your government is now sectarian. You got groups that are dividing because they don't have the same cohesive faith and belief and values. They have different values. They don't have a common set of values that foster social and cultural integration. They don't believe in that. That there's a war going on in your kingdom between these values. And I'm not, only a fool steps between two fools fighting. So I'm not interested in solving their dispute. I'm interested in promoting the values of Christ. And you figure it out. You figure out what is the real answer, because I'm apolitical. I'm not interested in their government. I'm not interested in overthrowing the United States or regulating citizens of the United States or telling them what to do. I'm interested in preaching Christ and his religion. But I want you to understand that you're a member of a civil religion in more ways than you were 100 years ago. You have gone into bondage because you have applied and registered and been baptized, immersed in a way of thinking. And your churches have been instrumental in doing this because they have not preached Christ. They say they preach Christ. They take his name in vain because they are not actually saying what he said. They are not actually doing what he said to do. They are not doers of the word. They are hearers only. They are whited sepulchers that carry with them the curse of the Pharisees. And they are putting it upon you, because they're up there speaking in tongues and barking like dogs in the manger, and they will not let you enter into the kingdom. They will not let you eat of the fruit of Christ. And they are not bearing fruit. It's just why the whole nation has gone into bondage. In our next show, we're going to talk more about the civil religion so that you begin to understand where the kingdom of God is, so you can turn around and head that way. Till then, may peace be unto you, and may God be with you. God bless.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net. Thank you.